Hello, everybody out there in Internet Radio Land. This is Blake Ruby. Welcome to my show, God is on the Sun. I'm here in my backyard. The sun is shining down on me right now. And for those of you who might be wondering why I named my show that, God is on the Sun, oh, it's a long story. And I'll take about, I need about maybe 15 minutes at least to explain it all to you. But suffice it to say that the spirits in our body. And don't you know that some of the problem of the world today, what's going on, is that we don't know that the spirit actually exists and the soul exists. Our science hasn't proven that the soul exists. Yet we know it does. Yet do we have proof? What kind of proof do we have that the spirit and soul exist? We dream at night, you know, and they say, some people say that the spirit in our body leaps and goes out and plays around into the dreamland, the spirit worlds even, maybe some of the planets in our solar system, and it refreshes itself, and that rejuvenates us. And we wake up, you know, we're refreshed because our spirits left our body and gone and done what they need to do, solve the problems that we're experiencing in our present day, everyday lives. But the spirit does exist. You've heard the song by the Police, that old song back in the 70s. The Police had many really good hits, and one of them was, "We are spirits in the material world." And so today on my show, one of the things I'm going to talk about is how to prove that the spirit does exist. And I've got a guest coming on at 6:30. Her name is Mia DeAngelos. She's the president of my Toastmasters Club. And she's written a book also called Broken Wings. She's going to explain about her story as written in the book. And so she'll be calling in around 6:30, and CBS Radio will patch her in. And so we'll continue the show with my interview of her. And that will be up until 7 o'clock. And man, time does fly. I'm going to turn the fan on. I'm here in my back patio. It's a hot day here in San Antonio. I'm guessing about 90-some degrees right now. Turning on my fan, get a little air blowing back here. And I'm going to close the back door. I get interrupted here every once in a while by dogs and people. So forgive me, please, if I'm getting interrupted and having to do things. The dog might come out here, start barking, and I'll have to get it to stop barking. That kind of thing. Anyway, so how have you all been over the last week? I've got my show every week now. Many shouts out to BBS Radio for having patience with me. And I've been on and off having my show with them for about over 2 years now. And really, it takes a lot of courage to talk about some of the things that I talk about. And there are many beautiful, brilliant people out there also that have a show on BBS Radio. I've seen some of the titles. I've been trying to tune in to some of the shows. One of them is called Spirituality, the Raw, Spirituality Raw, the Ass-Whipping Truth. I think that's such a cool title. And that pretty much explains what I was just saying about it takes a lot of courage to talk about some of the things that I talk about and what they and other people on BBS Radio. And you can have your own show too. Just coordinate with Doug. You know, it's a great thing to be able to talk for an hour. If you want to talk the whole show yourself, you can, or if you want to have guests, you can. And it is a wonderful thing. Really, nowadays, we don't have enough time to say what we want to say, like in Toastmasters, which I've been a member of for over 12 years. We have these speeches we give, and I've been, you know, giving speeches all those years. But there's usually 5 to 7 minute speeches, and 5 to 7 minutes, within that amount of time, is really not enough. I'm just getting warmed up usually. But at the end, you know, at about 7 minutes, you're starting to roll, and all of a sudden you got to stop. But that's the way it is. And can't complain too much because it does give you that opportunity to get up there and talk in front of people, you know, while they're listening to you and sitting around listening. There's so much potential for growth in that situation. You know, public speaking is pretty scary. Can be. When I was growing up, I was very shy and timid. I'd get embarrassed when I had to speak in class. And so many years passed by. I'm 65 now. I'll be 66 in August. Many years passed by before I was able to even start getting a good grasp, getting control of some of that fear that I experienced, you know, anxiety. And really, it's not rocket science. You just have to practice it, you know, and there's not too many chances to practice it. That's basically what it is. Very simple. A simple truth there. Practice makes perfect. Public speaking is a skill that you have to develop. So how do you develop it? You need those opportunities. They call it stage time in Toastmasters, where you just get up there in front of people and then you have your chance to talk and you talk. And you usually follow some rules, format, procedures. But you do get the chance to talk. People listen. Sometimes there's contests where you compete with other people. Oh, yes, competition. And I've been in a few of them, quite a few. And I might say, I haven't won too many. But the pressure is there. Really, the most uncomfortable part for me is to lose. The judges make their decision. Sometimes you might think, hey, I did better than that person, you know. I can't believe it because I did this, I did that. They didn't do that. You're supposed to do that. And yet they picked them over me. That's wrong. And sometimes it takes a day or two to recover from that. You know, you're like, man, how those judges picked them over me? It's not fair, you know. What? It's kind of subjective, you know. Anyway, going back to the spirit in our bodies. And with near-death experiences, and Mia is coming on later. She's going to talk about her near-death experience. I have learned from near-death experiences since 1992, when I first picked up the book by Betty Eady called Embraced by the Light. It was on the New York Times bestsellers list for a year at least. So people eat this stuff up, you know, they really enjoy hearing about it. It does make you think. Of course, there are the skeptics, and they say, well, it's the result of the neurons firing in the dying brain. Or, well, they're just saying that because they want to make some money and get publicity, be famous, you know. But there are some near-death experiences that have for the first one, the dying brain, that kind of refute that. I need to have my bottle of water here, because when I'm talking a lot, my mouth gets dry. I did go for a run today. I went for a one-mile run around the track. And I've been experimenting. I'll get back to what I was talking about, but just, by the way, I like to stay in shape. You know, I like to exercise my heart. And running, I've tried the run-walk-run method, a lot of sprinting, and 200-meter runs, 400-meter runs. I ran a mile today. That's a cool thing, you know, on a track. The impact's not so hard on that soft, corky-like material. Ah, fresh water. So anyway, I'm kind of pumped up from my run today. I like to incorporate a little bit of run into my routine. I do a lot of walking, too. But anyway, going back to, there's this one near-death experience in particular, and there's a specific name for it, and I'm sorry I didn't get it for you, but you can look it up on the Internet if you're interested afterwards or at any time. A woman was, they had to operate on her body, and so they did a procedure where they drain all the blood from the body, and they lower the temperature so that they can operate. Might be on the brain, I'm not sure, but all the blood is drained from the body, and essentially the heart stops beating and the person is in a state of limbo, kind of between life and death, you know. So there's no blood flowing in the brain, and the body temperature has dropped down to maybe 60, 70 degrees, you know, from 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. And so this woman went through this procedure, and her eyes were closed. Her ears were, I think, plugged up maybe. She had no brain flowing in her head. Her heart has stopped beating, and she remembers afterwards that she left her body. She's looking down at the surgeons operating on her. She was able to identify some of the instruments they were using, to include one that looked kind of like an electric toothbrush. And she heard the words that they were speaking. Afterwards, when she was revived, she spoke about how she had left her body and looked down, and she remembered exactly some of the words they were using and this particular instrument, which she had no knowledge of before. Of course, the non-believers would say, well, she knew about that particular instrument in advance. You know, she just made it up. But she was able to describe it, you know, it looked like an electric toothbrush and so on. So that kind of, that's pretty good evidence to refute the dying brain theory, you know, it's neurons firing, people having this near-death experience, that it was all imagined in their brain, in other words, wasn't outside of their body. But another thing to take into consideration as far as really good evidence that this happened, you know, that they actually went somewhere, they had a conversation with maybe deceased relatives or Jesus or God or some of the patriarchs of the Bible or the titles of the Bible or angels, you know, that it changes their life forever. I mean, this is like they wake up and, oh, my God, they could have been a skeptic before, you know, a non-believer. And all of a sudden their life has changed around completely, 180 degrees, you know. And that makes you wonder, dang, you know, this person was a lot different before this happened. Something really did happen, you know, and maybe I should pay attention to that. You know, I can't just think that they're trying to get publicity and, you know, they write a book. These people write a book about their experiences sometimes, and they make money from it. I wrote a book. I didn't have a near-death experience, but Mia, she's coming up here. She had a near-death experience. My wife had a near-death experience last May, around about this time. She got really sick, and she went to the urgent care. It was diagnosed as the flu, you know, the ordinary, everyday flu. And by the way, I just want to, at this time, say I'm very sorry for all the people that are dying out there from the coronavirus. You know, it's quite a thing going on, like we've never experienced before. My thoughts and prayers are with them, that God may bless their souls, and also that God may comfort their loved ones, you know, during this difficult time. And so the near-death experience changes people's lives. And the first one I'll mention to you about by Betty Eady. She had probably, they say, the most complete and profound near-death experience ever. But I've read a few, quite a lot, actually, since then. It's been a subject of interest for me, and I've done a lot of research. In fact, I've done so much research that I could probably get a PhD for near-death experiences if they would give one for that particular subject, which they don't, not that I'm aware of, but I know so much about near-death experiences that I could tell you, I could keep on talking for 3 hours and tell you everything that I know, and not even scratch the tip of the surface, I think. Going back to my wife, she had a near-death experience. It was around before Memorial Day last year. And she got in the flu. And then it's one night she was coughing big time. She ran out of cough syrup. I woke up like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I went to get her some cough syrup down at the local gas station store, you know. And I came back and gave it to her. She was in bad shape. She was also taking some medication. And so I said, okay, I got to go to work in the morning. You know, she took the syrup. She seemed like she was doing better. I said, tomorrow you need to go to the doctor, okay? But she was kind of putting it off and didn't want to go. And I went to work, came back later. She hadn't gone to the doctor. She said that she'd called and they were not accepting walk-ins. Can you believe that? A doctor, she was in a really bad shape, you know, and they wouldn't even accept her. Mm. But anyway, she, when I got home from work, she was in still pretty bad, a bad condition. So I said, okay, we're going to the emergency room on Lackland Air Force Base. And I said, I'll get the car ready. She could barely make it down the stairs. Got her in the car, got out to the emergency room. I went and got a wheelchair, wheeled her in. We waited just a little while. They took her back there. She had pneumonia. And the doctor said, I'm glad you brought her in because, well, you know, she, I forget exactly what she said, but I guess you could say I made a good decision. But it was really both of us that decided that. I don't want to take credit for that. You know what I mean? But she had pneumonia, and so they started giving her antibiotics, and turned out to be Legionnaire's disease, which is a really aggressive form of pneumonia, and the survival rate is like 1 in 5. And so they transferred her to Brooke Army Medical Center. The next day, I went there. I'd spent the night. Actually, an ambulance came and picked her up and took her there, and I followed her over, and I spent the night there. And so then I didn't sleep very well. I said, I'm going to go home, get a little more sleep, and I'll come back. Well, while I was gone, she had some respiratory failure. Her lungs just kind of collapsed. She'd been doing so much coughing. So they had to take her up to the ICU, and they put her on a ventilator, and they put a breathing tube into her. And she was like that for 6 days, 6 days, and it was touch and go. She had some great nurses, you know, a shout out to them, great people there. Brooke County Medical Center saved her life, really. So grateful to them. May God bless them. And so she had, afterwards she told me, I don't know at what time it was during that 6 days when she had the breathing tube in her, but she said that the tunnel appeared, you know, which is a common part of a near-death experience, the tunnels. And usually people will go down the tunnel to a light in the distance. And when they get to the light, then that's when they realize they're in the spirit lands, kind of a world of light, world on fire, maybe. I think. Not maybe. I know, I don't want to change the subject right now, but so then they meet to see relatives, they see angels. Heaven is a place of beauty, incredible beauty, but the colors very, very intense. And anyway, she didn't make it all the way down the tunnel, but she was starting to go down the tunnel, almost as if she wanted to. You know, maybe she was in a lot of pain, and you know, it is enticing, you know what I mean? And so she put her hand to grab the tunnel and be carried away, which is how people die usually. They go through the tunnel, some make it back, most don't, you know? And she heard a voice say, it's not your time. And people do hear voices, sometimes voices of angels, maybe the voice of Jesus. Whoever you think it might be, you know, it could be Buddha if you're another religion. It could be Vishnu if you're Hindu, or it could be Muhammad if you're Muslim, you know, or Islamic. And then some people have encounters with God. Some people make it to the throne room. And, you know, the Bible talks about the throne of God. But there's so much, like I said, there's so much detail to near-death experiences. And one surprising thing, which is very good evidence for those that might not believe, it's logical to believe that since most people have these same parts of a near-death experience, you know, coming out of their body, looking down on their body, going through a tunnel, a light in the distance, talking to deceased relatives, hearing music, hearing angels, meeting with Jesus, meeting with God, seeing streets of gold, silver, colors everywhere, mountains and valleys, rivers, oceans, lakes, seas, fields, beautiful fields of green, 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 cool grass, fields of wheat, trees with the fruit of life on them, angels everywhere traveling by chariot on these different roadways, kind of like praise in the air everywhere. Activities, a lot of activities going on. The people that have lived on Earth throughout these years in the past, centuries ago, different eras, different cultures, all kinds of people who've made it to that place, that world of light, and where the spirit, mother and father, mother God, father God are there. And for those of you that don't believe there's a mother God, my rationale is we live here on Earth, right? Like Earth as in heaven. How do you think we produce children here on Earth? And don't get me wrong, I'm saying that we are the children of God, but here on Earth, mothers and fathers reproduce. That's how we get children. That's the process. There's nothing outside of that process. It is a process here on Earth for a mother and father to create either a son or a daughter. That's how you do it. There is no such thing as a father being able to create children by himself. You know what I'm saying? That's logical. You need a mother and a father to create children. We are the children of God. That's why I don't like that part in the Bible where it says, so God, John 3:16, God sent his only son. Hello? Hello? Only son? Yet when Jesus taught the people how to pray at the Sermon on the Mount, he said, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Hello? So you get these contradictions in the Bible, but for the most part, I accept the Bible. I like the wisdom of the Bible, you know, its beauty, the fact that it talks about divine intervention like the world has never seen before, like no other book, you know. All the miracles that Jesus performed before him, Moses, all that Moses did, you know, incredible stuff that went on. And so near-death experiences, Betty Eades, that was the first one I picked up. I won't tell you about her experience, but if you're interested, she wrote like three or four books that are out there. And then there's one by Lou Famoso that I really like. Lou Famoso, a guy that was over in Vietnam. And he came back, veteran from Vietnam. He bought himself a brand new Ford Mustang. I think it was 63 or 64. Going to a party, traveling down the road, backcountry road at about 100 miles an hour. And those old Mustangs are very... Front light, you know, the, the other way around, they're very heavy in the front and light in the rear. So when you start going at a high rate of speed, they become very unstable. And so he lost control going that speed, and it flipped end over end several times. He got thrown from the car, it caught on fire. And he said he found himself thrown from the car. It was on, and he was about maybe 5 feet from it, 5-10 feet from it. And there were some friends of his that were going to that same party, and they saw what had happened. They stopped, they picked him up, took him to the hospital. He said he left his body, and he went down that tunnel. And so his story is really cool, how he met God. He said he was there. He found himself in this environment where all of a sudden things started coming into focus, you know, that weren't there, just kind of like painting a canvas, you know, taking some paint, putting it on a canvas out, you know, things came into reality. And he saw trees and flowers, and he saw this orb of light coming towards him, and it grew bigger and bigger. At first it was like a baseball, then a basketball, then a beach ball, this beautiful golden light. And then right in front of him, it stopped and materialized into this beautiful being of light that was made with some kind of nuclear energy. It was just outlined in a fine quill pen, and he realized he was in the presence of God. And one thing God said to him was, that really made an impression on me, that is, man will pray, P-R-E-Y, on man, until man learns to pray, P-R-A-Y, for man. And that, I thought, was incredible. So to keep that in mind, please pray for your fellow human beings out there, you know, especially the ones being affected by this virus. And you know that throughout the history of this world, we've had a lot of war and pestilence. You know, the Spanish flu back in 1918, right at the end of World War One. You know, so a lot of negativity going on back then, right? A lot of people being killed, millions of people being killed. Yet, with World War II, we didn't have that. And also the Korean War, Vietnam War, Desert Storm, Iraq War, you know. Not until now that this pestilence has come about, you know. And it might be because of negativity, and maybe it's just a way to get us to get back in touch with who we are, you know, and doing the right things and loving each other. Love is the key. And so one of the things, as I mentioned in the beginning, we can do to love each other more is to realize that we are all brothers and sisters in spirit. You know, it seems like we were made to forget when we came in this world, I believe. And by the way, I have a book that's in the Amazon Kindle bookstore called The Gray Brain and the Golden Soul. It's got many really excellent chapters on spiritual information. And I need to re-edit it. So it's got some, maybe small typographical errors in there. Hope you wouldn't hold that against me, you know, because I rushed to put it in there. It took me like 8 years to finally get it published, you know, but then I didn't do it right, and I need to go back and do it right. But so it's got all these chapters on great stuff that I've learned from other people, you know, especially the near-death experience. Really, really interesting stuff that I have learned. Another person that had an incredible near-death experience is David Oakford and Damian Brinkley. And what they went through, I mean, you could say that it was a dream. Jesse Duplantis is another one. He's a very well-known televangelist living in New Orleans. He's got his mega church there. And he wrote a book called Heaven, Close Encounters of the God Kind. And what he experienced heaven in such an incredible way. That's one of my favorite books of all time. Heaven is called Close Encounters of the God Kind. I think I hear someone. Mia might be getting ready to get patched in here. Hi, Mia. You there?
Hi, Blake. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
I am fantastic.
Well, thanks for joining on my show.
Yeah, of course.
Good to have you. And let's get right into, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we can get to the near-death experience that you had, and then you could talk about your book. So just give us a little introduction on yourself, if you would, please.
I am Mia DeAngelis, author of Broken Wings, which is available on Amazon now. I am in training to be a motivational speaker, which Toastmasters has greatly helped me with that. I am also the president of Lead to Succeed, a Toastmasters club for women, and Blake.
Yes, go ahead.
Because
it is a club for women, and I think at the time I'm the only man that's part of the club, and mainly because my wife as a member there, so they accepted me. But anyway, I just thought I'd add that. Go ahead, please, Mia.
Oh, that's okay. I was actually listening to the beginning of your show just now. And
what'd you
something
think?
You said, it's really great. I was really interested, and I was like, okay, you have to turn it off and call in because it's your turn to go on. But I was listening to what you said at the beginning about dreams being connected to the spirit, and it triggered a memory for me. I was wondering if that's okay for me to share that.
Yes, of course. Yeah, it's your time. You can do what you want. Say what you want. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So I've actually had two near-death experiences. The first one was about 4 months before the second one, and about 2 months before the first one, so 6 months before the big one is what I call it, I had a dream where I was in my minivan. I had a minivan at the time, and I was driving along, and I was on the edge of a cliff, a very steep cliff, and I was about to drive off the cliff, and my girlfriend that I grew up with was waving at me and, like, trying to tell me, no, don't go, don't go. And I drove off the cliff, and as I was falling, I heard this loud, booming voice saying, hold on, you can survive this, you can make it. And then I woke up. And I believe what you were saying, where dreams are connected to the spirit, I believe that some dreams I think are the subconscious, just kind of trying to work out things in your daily life. But I also believe that some dreams are the God consciousness trying to tell us something, trying to send us a message or give us some sort of peace or hope or just connecting with us on that deeper level.
Awesome.
So about 2 months after that, I was really, really sick, and my gallbladder actually ended up rupturing, which was a very dangerous situation, and they had to rush me into emergency surgery. And I remember being in that other realm, I guess as you would call it, and standing on the edge of a cliff again. I don't know what it is with me and cliffs. I should probably stay away from them, but I don't. But I'm standing on the edge of a cliff again, and to my back is, you know, just that steep fall drop, and it's all blackness. And then to the other side of the cliff, there's this amazing, beautiful, like gold and white world where it's just gorgeous in this bright light. And I really wanted to go towards that light. But when I turned to go towards it, there was an angel that stopped me. And he was huge and tall, and he looked like a Roman soldier, but he was so beautiful. And it just absolutely stunning, like more beautiful than I can't even describe. I have trouble describing it. And his armor was just gold, was silver with gold inlays all over it. And he looked at me and he pointed his finger at me and he said, it's not time for you yet. And he pushed on my chest and I fell back over the precipice. And then I woke up after surgery. So that was my first near-death experience.
Wow. Awesome. Do you think that was an archangel, by any chance? Because I know that Gabriel, you know, they're very, very beautiful. Even Archangel Lucifer, I say, is very beautiful. But go ahead.
When I discussed it with my girlfriend, she studied angels, and that's what her conclusion was that that was an archangel.
Wow.
So.
No, they are beautiful.
Yeah, interesting.
A lot about angels too. Yes, and they have a mission. You know, they work for God basically, and they can do it. They have a lot of power, and they show up at just the right time, and they know exactly what to do. You know, I read a lot of stories of angels actually intervening in people's lives to help save them here on Earth. You know, I can think of.
Yeah.
One in particular of a man, he was a chaplain at the chapel on Lackland Air Force Base, and he said that it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. He was with his family driving down the road, and he was starting to get tired, going about 60, 65 miles an hour. And he looked at the clock, and it was about 20 to 3. And next thing he knew, he looked at the clock again. It was like 5 minutes to 3. And he was going still 60, 65 miles an hour between two semis. 15 minutes had passed. He'd closed his eyes, and he was still going. And he believes that it was an angel that took over, you know. He didn't actually see an angel, but anyway, continue, please.
Well, since you mentioned that, I'll just like backtrack just a little bit, because when my gallbladder ruptured, I was actually at home alone, and I had this wood panel wall in my bedroom, and I was laying in bed, and I sat up, and I looked at the wall, and the knot holes on the wall started, they turned into like giant bugs and started moving across the wall. And I consciously, I knew, like I was telling myself, you're hallucinating. Something's not right. Like you're actually having hallucinations. But I still didn't do anything about it because I just thought, oh, maybe I just took some really good drugs. You know, the doctor had given me some prescriptions because I had been really sick. And I thought maybe this is just a really fun drug reaction and I should just go with it. But then one of the knot holes turned into an angel and it didn't say anything. It didn't do anything. It just kind of sat there and glowed, but it made me feel urgent. And I called 911. And that's when I ended up going to the hospital. And the doctor actually asked me, he said, your liver enzymes are through the roof because your gallbladder ruptured. I'm surprised you weren't hallucinating. And I was like, well, I think I was hallucinating. But I believe that angel was an angel, not a hallucination. I believe that was an angel saying, hey, Mia, you need to do something here or you're going to die.
Yes. Well, they're right on time always. You know, they know it's like, and I mentioned this in my book, which is in Amazon also, that our lives are being recorded, and angels have different purposes. You know, all the different types of angels besides archangels. There are powers, virtues, dominions, cherubs, seraphims, ordinary angels, and they all have a purpose. It could be to monitor the atmosphere of the Earth, the rotation of the planet, the revolution of our planet. There's Archangel Raphael, who is the angel of healing. There's Archangel Uriel, who is like a messenger angel. There's a lot of them. A lot. And when you get to heaven, there's one book in particular that I love. I've read over and over. I don't have my hands on it. I think I gave it to somebody to read, and I didn't get it back. And I plan on ordering it again from Amazon. It's called Paradise, the Holy City, and the Glory of the Throne. And that is probably, in my opinion, the best description of what heaven is like. And you heard me mention, talk about it earlier on, you know, before you came on the show. And what we can expect to find when we're in heaven, and praising the Creator for the miracles of all creation is in the atmosphere. That's what they do there.
Now, do you think we'll all find the same thing?
Pardon me?
Do you think we'll all find the same thing as far as heaven goes? Do you think heaven is the same for everybody?
No, I don't. I think there's a hell. I think it's like a jail, God's jail. There's a book that I read that's out there called 23 Minutes in Hell. And it's written by this well-known pastor, reverend, who had an experience one night, and he didn't really deserve, I mean, he hadn't done anything really bad in his life, like murder or rape or physical or sexual abuse of anyone, but God, the Creator, wanted to give him a glimpse into what hell was like, and so he arranged it sometime in the early morning, and he was taken down into hell. He went down through this dark hole, kind of like the opposite of a tunnel. Found himself in this place where he was like in the spirit, but still able to smell and see around and feel, you know. And it was putrid, a very putrid, horrible odor, atmosphere, you know, the worst smell you can imagine in that place. And there were snakes and spiders, and there were demons and people that were there that kind of like in jail, you know, that were screaming and saying nonsensical stuff, kind of trapped there. I don't believe eternally, but it's kind of like you go there, they serve their time, you get rehabilitated, kind of, and then you get back on your soul's journey again. That's what I believe. But he did mention in that book that there's two demons there that are the most horrible, grotesque, unimaginably terrifying demons that you can imagine, that were specially created to take on, what's the right word to describe it? Some people, you know, are just evil, and they commit very, very evil things. You know, like, for example, Hitler, or somebody who's responsible for the deaths of many people. And when he went there, he had an experience with both of those demons. And one, if I could describe it from memory, was about maybe 10 feet tall. It looked like a raptor from Jurassic Park, kind of. Maybe a small Tyrannosaurus Rex, but it was deformed in a way. It had huge teeth, and when it got a hold of him, it was like ripping him pieces. Even though he was in the spirit, you could still feel the flesh being ripped off him, and the pain. He felt the pain, and this thing had absolutely no mercy at all in it. It was just designed for that one purpose of just terrifying someone to the core of their being, you know, and then he would heal, the flesh would come back on his body, his wounds would heal, and then it would start all over again. He'd get torn apart again, and then repeat over and over again, you know. So some people, to answer your question, I believe not everyone will go to heaven right away. It depends on what they did in this lifetime, and you have to earn it. In other words, you have to graduate from this existence. And it's such a long story. I can get into it. My book talks about it. But let's get back to yourself. Tell us a little bit about your book.
Let me tell you about my big near-death experience, or my death experience.
Yes.
Because that one actually ties in a little bit. You know, I saw some hell realms as well. But what happened was, you go about 6 months, and to give you a little bit of backstory and what my book is actually about, is I had a lot of trauma in my childhood, and I had a drug and alcohol addiction in my adulthood, and just a lot of unhealed things in my life that led me to a position where I didn't think that there was a life for me beyond that point in my life. And so I chose to commit suicide. I wanted to die. So I set out to do that, and I accomplished it. And what happened was I was in ICU, and my physical body was in ICU. And when I went into that spirit realm, I was still laying in the hospital bed for a minute, and behind me was I think it was death. That's my perception of it. It wasn't like an angel. It was a shadow man, is what I can call it. And he was standing behind me, not ominously, not really making me feel one way or another about him. I wasn't scared, or I didn't feel any sort of anything from him, really, other than he was just there to guide me. And so I got out of the bed, and it was this long tunnel that was just really, really bright, bright white. And along this tunnel, there are all of these cave-like entrances. And I kept trying to go into each one. And one of them was a beautiful scenery of like a cabin with all this green grass and trees and a lake. And it was just very peaceful. And I tried to go into that. And the shadow figure said, "You're choosing wrong." He didn't try to stop me. He didn't pull me back or anything like that. He just simply said, "You're choosing wrong," which made me pause and come back. And then I would look at the next one. And I reckoned it with the Garden of Eden. There was fruit trees and there was, I believe was Eve. She had long dark hair and she was completely naked. And that's the only thing I can figure out, that that's what that was. So I tried to go in there thinking maybe that's where I belong. And he said, "You're choosing wrong," which again made me pause and pull back. And then I saw these other ones on the other side of the hallway. There was one that had just all these giant bugs and creatures. It was very ominous and scary and dark. And I thought, well, maybe that's where I belong. So I tried to go in there, and he said, "You're choosing wrong," again, which made me pause and come back. And then I saw another realm on the same side of fire and just all of these miserable-looking souls just burning. And I thought, oh, well, that's where I belong. And again, he said, "You're choosing wrong." Excuse me. And I paused and pulled back. And I don't know how long this went on for. I believe time in the spirit realm is quite different from real time.
Yes.
But I wanted out of my body and out of my life so desperately that I was willing to go into heaven or hell. It didn't matter to me at that point, as long as I didn't have to go into my body, as long as I didn't have to go back to life. That's how desperate and how down I was at that point in my life. And he just kept saying, "You're choosing wrong," over and over again, until I finally threw my hands up and I said, "Fine, I choose to live." And then that's when I woke up in the ICU.
Wow, that's so cool. I like that. Wow. And you said there was a shadow figure. I think it was a messenger from God. You know, maybe an angel, just in a different way of showing itself, you know, for lack of a better way of describing it. Your story reminds me very much of a woman. I might have mentioned it to you. Her name is Angie Fenimore. She wrote a book called Beyond the Darkness. She committed suicide, too. She said she went into like a holding area where she was in the presence of other suicides. She realized, she saw a young girl that was maybe 16 years old and realized that she had taken her life also. She had taken pills, this Angie Fenimore, and had lied down on the couch in her living room to die, and she left her body. So she went to this holding area, and then all of a sudden she was whisked to this dark, dark plane, like at the speed of light. Some magnetic force just pulled her there, and she landed on this plane, and she was surrounded by thousands of these souls, and they were all like walking around in a stupor, not knowing what was going on, mumbling nonsensical things, and just with no hope, no love, no joy, despair. I mean, it's all there, you know. They'd come to a place where just love died, you know, and they were kept in there by this like black massive energy, like maybe dark matter or dark energy. And then she saw a little pinprick of light coming towards her in the distance, and it grew larger and larger, and it materialized into, like I described before with Lou Formoso's near-death experience, this being of light, except this being was like, had an image, you know, and she described him as having a long flowing hair and a beard and like a huge muscular barrel chest that looked kind of like, and everything, like a robe on, and it was as if the wind was blowing him so that his hair was blowing in the wind, kind of, and when he spoke, it seemed like the whole universe was shaking at the sound of his voice, you know, and he said to her, "Is this what you really want?" and you repeat it. Is this what you really want? And so she wanted to have a conversation with him. And almost as soon as she thought something, instantaneously, he had responded to her, you know. She's, for example, she said, but my life is so hard. And just like, and instantly, he said, you think that's hard? That's nothing compared to what awaits you if you take your own life. Life is supposed to be hard. You have to go through it. We all have to go through it. You can't throw in the towel, you know, that kind of thing. So her experience was like yours, and it reminds me very much of yours, but a little bit different, you know. Still, you came back, and that's a good thing. There's a lot of people committing suicide today. I considered committing suicide myself. You know, it's something you have to deal with. I had my own problems with substance abuse in the past. My parents, they were alcoholics, you know, and I lived in a secondhand smoke environment, and that's enough to probably drive anybody, you know, bats, crazy, if you will. But go ahead, continue with what you were, anything you want to talk about. We're running, we only got a few more minutes left, about five.
Well, like you said, I appreciate you being vulnerable and sharing that you, you know, thought about suicide yourself, because there's so many people out there, you're right, that think about it and contemplate it and then actually do it, because they don't understand that there is actually help and hope out there, and you can get past your traumas, and you can overcome drug and alcohol addiction, and you can recover, and you can live a vibrant, healthy life. I mean, look at me today. Who would have thought? Yesterday, I got to go take a plane ride. One of those little, it was a gyroplane, and I got to go just enjoy some beautiful scenery up in the sky.
Nice.
Just for being who I am today.
Awesome, yeah.
And I...
Go ahead.
I get to enjoy things like that. I get to write books about my life and my story and publish it and have other people read it and hopefully get help from it. And I get to go talk to people and interact with other people that are struggling with some of the same things I've struggled with. And life is just a journey. And sometimes when you're on a journey, it's rough roads. And sometimes it's really rough roads. Like the potholes are deep and they're crater-sized potholes. And you don't think you're going to be able to get over them. But you can. You just have to learn how to drive through them. And there are tools and there are things out there that can help you. And I just want everyone to know that they can get help.
Yes, it's true. It's usually when we're younger, you know, when we're very impressionable and we don't know exactly what we want to do, where we want to go, and we get involved with these substance abuse situations. We've got friends that really aren't friends, people who lead us down the wrong road who aren't really looking out for our best interests. We're not relying on ourselves. We're not dependent on ourselves. We're not really responsible for our actions. Maybe our parents are to blame. You know, they say when we get to be about 17, 18 years old, we're responsible for our actions. But I say not really, because our parents...
Well, you're missing the most important part, too, Blake. We're not connecting to God.
Yes, yes, right. You're right, absolutely. Thank you for saying that, because that's true. When I was going through my experiences... even though my mother, she was a very Christian woman, and she was into mysticism, she was a member of a group called the Rosicrucians, who supposedly date back 5,000 years back to the Egyptian days, and they say that Jesus was the greatest mystic of all time, so they practiced things like astral projection, and they studied the human aura, dreams, and they studied dreams in detail. So she was a member with like 22 degrees, and she got me on the path. But I had my time, especially when I joined the Army. There was like 8 years there where I was going out. I was getting so drunk that I couldn't even remember walking back home. Well, I'd wake up in the morning. How did I get to my bed? The last thing I remember, I was at this club drinking soju, you know, and smoking cigarettes. And I could have died many times, you know, walking home. I had to cross these railroad tracks, you know. We got 1 minute. Let me just wrap up and say thank you, Mia, for coming on my show. I'd like to have you back again if you would sometime in the future. ladies and gentlemen out there, my guest is Mia DeAngelos. Her book is Broken Wings. You can find it in Amazon, the Amazon Kindle bookstore. Is that right, Mia?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. It was an absolute pleasure, and I will come back anytime.
Thank you, Mia. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. This is Blake Ruby from my show, God is on the Sun, and I'll be back next week. In the meantime, I hope you have a good week. Take care of yourself, really, and may God bless you. May God bless America. May God bless us, everyone. Thank you. I love you. We love you. Goodbye.